It's time for Twig. This week in Google, we're going to talk about cookies. Yes, third-party cookies. And why they're good for you, bad for you, good for you, bad for you. We can't figure out our minds either. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 136, recorded February 29th, late day 2012. It's a polar bear. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at ting.com/twig. This is Twig, This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the internet, the cloud, the Facebook, the Twitter, and all of that jazz. Junif Pani is here from smarterware.org and the author of the ThinkUp app at thinkupapp.com. Great to have you, Gina.
Happy leap day.
Happy leap day, the 29th.
I'm not wearing blue and yellow today, but leap day.
Where did that come from?
The leap day Williams, 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Yes.
That show aired a few days ago, and already blue and yellow is it.
Yep.
It's like become like it's in stone.
And any minute I'm going to sprout gills and, you know.
And 10 years from now, people wear blue and yellow and they won't know why. Actually, it'll be 12 years from now. They won't know why.
It was an excellent cultural commentary on absurd holiday figures and rituals and customs.
I missed it. I didn't see it, and I still know about it. It's really fascinating.
There you go. It's true.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis is also here, the author of What Would Google Do? His newest book is called Public Parts. He blogs at BuzzMachine.com and teaches journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Jeff.
And I have a new venture.
Yes.
I downloaded mine, but I haven't had a chance to read it. This is a little bitty book.
It's a Kindle single, only a buck, folks. I'm number 12 on the Kindle single list.
Yay!
Because just like you guys got me up higher in the debate over privacy. Come on, Twig Nation. Come on. It's only 99 cents.
So what's in this book?
It argues that it's not a book. It's just an e-book. It's just 6,000 words. It argues that Gutenberg was the original technology entrepreneur, that he went through all the same challenges that a technology entrepreneur goes through today, solving technology problems, developing in secret, and then later he became more open source, putting together a team, finding capital, finding customers, and he was done in the end by his cash flow and his cap table. But even so, he obviously disrupted the world in a way that we all hope to do today, and I think he's the patron saint of Silicon Valley, and that's what I argue.
Wow. That sounds great. 6,000 words.
It's fun. 6,000 words.
And it's selling all right, it sounds like.
It's no more than a typical Twig rant from me, so, you know.
Is it a profit deal?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll make, you know.
It's all profit, I guess, isn't it? It doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, Kindle single was actually very easy to deal with. They said last week, okay, we'll go with it. Within a week, it was copy edited.
Oh, so you have to get them. Who is they? Amazon?
Amazon, yeah.
So, and do they do the copy? Oh, okay. And do they do the copy?
They did copy editing, and they created the cover. And
I like the cover.
It was very easy, very pleasant.
And they take what percentage?
They take 30%.
Just like Apple.
Yeah.
Yes. Neato. Well, you sent me a coupon, so I can't say I bought it. But maybe I'll just buy another one.
No.
I can't, though, because I've turned off third-party cookies, and I can't log into Amazon. Damn it. Sorry, Jeff.
Is this your first self-published?
Yeah, I wanted to learn how. I mean, it also says to me, whenever people say, well, you're against paywalls, Jarvis, you think content has no value. So, well, I'll sell you this, too. You know, I want to learn about it. I want to try it.
Look, we're all going to have paywalls soon, and I hope you enjoy them. That's all I could say. I'm referring to an earlier conversation which was not recorded and had nothing to do with coffee, so don't get all excited.
It's a world of first parties only.
I am sad that I did not go to Barcelona for many reasons.
Yes.
But Mobile World Congress has been amazing, including a keynote from our fearless leader, Eric Schmidt.
I can't remember him. He doesn't usually do keynotes.
He does mobile. He did a mobile event in or a technology and mobile event in Germany some time ago. He does them on these kinds of industry events, which would surprise you, but he does do them occasionally. It was good, I thought. That was very good.
Now, according to Stephen Shankland, writing for CNET, he says, the summary of Eric's speech is, with the internet, the weak will be made strong unless dictators try to keep too much control. Is that a fair? I didn't watch it. Is that a fair synopsis?
Well, it's not a synopsis. He obviously showed off Android and not everything else. But yeah, I think morally it's a synopsis. It says, beware, people. It's the same discussion we don't want to have again that we were just having about regulation of things like cookies. And at third parties.
We can. You can talk. I'm just not going to say a word.
I'm over the end.
My bottom is still sore. I do not want to hear about no more video. Spanking, please.
I don't want to know any more about that. So he was warning against regulation today that you think has this impact that in fact has another impact, and I think that was the moral message here. But he was really also being terrible. You know, he's a technology optimist even more than I am, talking about self-driving cars and how it's going to save unbelievable numbers of lives and how robotics will make a difference and how more data will be helpful in our lives. And this goes to the conversation we were having before the show started, that it is up to, Gina was saying, up to media and advertising to show the benefit of cookies. And it's up to, I think, technology companies like Google to show the benefit of what they do in creating new technology. And if they don't, people are going to continue to be scared of it. I'm not sure that extolling a highly optimistic, some would say utopian future is necessarily going to be credible with everybody who's scared. But I still think it's worthwhile saying, if you tamp down here, folks, this is what you may give up.
You know, it's funny. I used to be afraid for the net because of big companies, net neutrality, and companies like Comcast and other stakeholders the record industry, the movie industry, trying to kill the net because they saw it as a threat to their business model. Now I realize what's going to kill the net. It's its users.
Wow.
I'm stunned.
You thought you were in trouble before, Leo.
I am stunned. No, I mean, really, I truly believe that this knee-jerk terror over tracking I think it's going to really be a problem because it just makes it impossible to create the free stuff that we create.
Amen. You brought it up, Leo. Let that be clear here. Yes, I agree. Absolutely. I think that's the danger, is that we're getting into a moral panic over technology. And we're acting as if it's big companies doing it. And yes, some of them are. And yes, they do boneheaded things. But we have to be concerned about the unintended consequences of the impact on the tools that we so love and depend upon and the freedom that that brings.
But I think my issue is I don't think people understand technology pretty much at all. You know, most people. People who watch this show do. But most people do not understand technology at all. And so this is so complicated of a subject that even we who do have a difficult time explaining it and understanding it. I despair of normal people getting it. And the easy headline, the easy takeaway is Google tracked you on the iPhone and that's it. Done. That's all you need to say. And that's forever in people's minds and it's over.
Leo, one of the most amazing, one of the things that really fits in with that argument in what Eric Schmidt said was that he basically said, I'm trying to find it here because before some other earlier, technology will disappear. It will just be there. Right, which is part of the view. So you don't have to know about it. It's underneath everything. But when you're afraid of technology, when it seems mysterious, when you don't know what it does, that's perhaps the wrong way to go. Because then people get more frightened of what they don't know.
Right. Now, Gina's of the opinion that the media companies, like, this is what Eric Schmidt did, but, you know, he's preaching to the converted when he's standing on a stage at Mobile World Congress. But you think, Gina, that Eric needs to do more of this, that everybody needs to explain this. And is that going to solve it?
I mean, I think being clear about what you're doing, what the benefits of shared and aggregate data is.
Because it's too complicated and technical a subject. People don't get it.
Jeff's book, Public Parts, just straight up plug. I mean, he's doing the good work of saying, hey, These are the benefits of living publicly, putting your data out there, sharing data. I think things like Flickr, you know, defaulting to public, tools that default to public, and the benefit that we get out of those things. I think it's important to tell those stories to counteract the moral panic stories. I think Google, with their privacy policy consolidation, which goes into effect tomorrow, is in a really good position to say, look at this huge suite of products that we have, and now that we can share data, you've agreed to let us share behavioral data between them, look at the value we can provide you, right? So they're in a really good position to show that. And I do think it's about telling a better story. I think that it's in the media company's best interest to just be transparent and upfront about the fact that if they're offering free content, you know, you're the product, not them. You know, this idea that if you're using free service, then you're handing over your information and we're providing value. It's a fair trade. I mean, I think that there are a lot of people who aren't technologists who look at free services, look at like Facebook and think, how is this free? How is this company worth so much money and it's free? You know, why do I get to use this thing for free? We have to stop telling the free story and just be honest.
It isn't free.
You give your information right. And they provide a communication service. And it's a fair trade and it's beneficial in a lot of ways. So you know, this is what we do on the show. This is what Jeff did with his book. And I have more hope about it. Leo, it sounds like you've had a rough week. But yeah. I have hope that we can turn this around and that we can tell the story in a way that's not overly technical, but just be more upfront about the idea that if you're not paying for a service, then you are the product. Maybe that's not such a great way to put it. But just get people used to the idea that sharing your information, if you share your information, then you get these benefits and then you get to use these tools. If you don't want to share your information, then you don't get to use the tools.
That's not going to work.
No.
That's not going to work. People want Facebook. They want it for free. They have no idea that it costs money. They don't understand that a server costs money. They have no idea.
But I think there's some uneasiness about it. I think this is where the moral panic comes from. You know, like there's some uneasiness. People who don't understand technology are like, they love Facebook. They don't really understand why it's free. You know, they're going to see these stories about the IPO and gazillions of dollars it's going to involve. And it's sort of, I think it's just this like big mystery to folks.
Well, and then what happens because of the moral panic is the thing that Google did, which I agree was wrong on iOS, is because of the moral panic. Because Google considered saying, well, we want this information and realized that people would say, you know, they would be freaked out. So the engineer in him said, well, we're really not doing anything bad. We're just going to set this plus one button. So let's just do it. And I think what you're going to see is two things will happen. So there's going to be this moral panic. Companies will try to sneak more because you can't say, hey, we just want to track you for advertising purposes to give you a free service. People go, well, the hell with that. It's like this doesn't affect us. Twit doesn't use third-party tracking cookies. It literally does not affect us. But if everybody started using ad blockers, that would affect us, right? So I could think in my head of that. People just, everybody uses ad blockers. You say, but wait a minute, it's a free service. You use ad blockers, we can't do it. People say, well, let's, you know, figure out a way because we're going to use it and we're going to use ad blockers. And then the companies do figure out a way. They sneak around. Then government gets into it. And now we're really in trouble.
Right.
And I think that's exactly what's happening kind of right now.
Yep.
Anyway, moving on. At one point, Google considered having its own currency. By the way, Facebook's already doing this.
Yeah, isn't Facebook doing this?
Yes.
They've got those kind of those cards. I've seen them in like Target.
Not the same way Google was. Google was going to do a Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer money system.
Currency.
And
Eric said the reason they chose not to was not because of technology or logistics. It was because it's illegal and governments fear it because they wouldn't have control. And people could just have exchange on their own and governments don't like that.
Governments hate that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we just take a moment and say, how cool would a Google-backed Bitcoin be? How cool would a Google-backed Bitcoin be?
Wouldn't be so cool.
They were going to call them Google Bucks. Your Google Bucks. I think they should have called them Googs or something else. But
Now, I should warn everybody that if Google did that, it would be to make money. Just so you understand, they didn't do it. They wanted to do it not because they were nice people, but because they wanted to make some money. Damn.
Theo needs a vacation.
Damn them.
Can I show you a nice video from Barcelona? Maybe
please cheer me up. Yeah, here's mobile. Look at this. They do it outside, which is kind of cool.
Or at least partly outside.
So some of it's outside, some of it's inside, I guess. There's a robot, cheery little robot. How could that be bad?
But it gets better.
They're making all
plushy androids.
Yeah.
Oh, we want
smoothies. There's ice cream sandwiches too.
You see, this is exactly how they subvert you. I just want to warn you.
This is how I
make you think they're nice people with fuzzy little robots, and then they make money off of you.
They're greedy capitalists.
Wow, Leo really is.
Man,
this is not fun to Leo.
Let's start singing the International, Leo.
What if I got to find the ice cream sandwich?
You're all a bunch of commies.
No. There's ice cream sandwiches in here.
Wow. What about jelly beans?
Well, there was a jelly bean photo in a private meeting.
I really regret not going this year because this is clearly where the rubber meets the road in technology is, and I think next year we'll have to be at Mobile World Congress.
Well, that was Eric's main point too, is that we're just at the point where, you know, 2 billion people are connected to the internet. There are 7 billion people in the world. There's so much growth to go. They're going to come on through what we now would call smartphones, but we'll call something else. And, you know, an Android in every pocket. And that's where he's headed. And it's about connectivity.
Yes. And then making money as a result.
Well, of course, it's Jason Sparrow, who's head of mobile sales. Sales, folks. who said that?
I cannot take you here today.
Who said that 1 billion people will be using mobile as their number one way to get online by 2012? Primary method this year. Yep. A billion people.
Yeah. There's such a thing as mobile. Mobile's just where we're always going to be mobile.
It's the future. Know where we are. It's connecting.
But here's the other problem. It's going to know where you are.
Well, I think that really is a big issue with mobile is that these things really are spy devices. They've got GPS built in. I mean, tracking cookies is like so 1990. This stuff really knows exactly where you are, and people
we
like
know where you ate pizza.
Dennis
and we
Crowley
know what you had on it.
Denz is talking at Mobile World Congress. The guy who started Foursquare, he wants to do a new Foursquare that lights up a map wherever you are. You look at this map, and it shows all the things that Foursquare recommends, all the places your friends have been. In fact, they've got an NFC chip now that instead of checking in, and this actually is going to be critical to the success of Foursquare. You just tap your phone against the NFC thing, and it says, "I'm here." And if we could just get everybody to do that, then we could really make some money. But seriously, this is the benefit you get from all that tracking is that now you know where your friends have been, what places they like. But there's tracking involved. So I wonder if this it feels like Puritanism, this sudden puritanical privacy concern is going to just kind of make all this stuff shrivel up. I mean, you need there's a trade. You get some benefits from this. And mobile is absolutely critical in all of this, not just media.
I hate to plug and make money because of it, but that's exactly why I wrote the book. That's exactly what I feared, that it's not about the privacy is important and it's worthy and it needs protection and we all have it and there's nothing wrong with it, but it is being used as a guise to come in and regulate the technology. Same as piracy, security, decency, civilization in the case of Sarkozy. These are all guises of why governments are trying to come in and regulate the net. And we're falling into a trap, people. We're falling into a terrible trap.
Maybe next.
Gina goes, I'm on a show with two crazy men.
You know, Jeff and I have different, you know, Jeff really is like, he's slowly changing my mind from week to week. I feel that I need to represent the technologists. And these aren't people that don't understand what's going on. I mean, this is our audience. If you look what's going on in the chat room, this is our audience.
Oh, yeah.
These people that know up.
Yeah.
That feel really wary about these things. And my default setting is to feel wary about these things. And I think that comes from two things. I'm a woman and I've had a crazy guy sending me crazy emails for three or four years. So
Google's not a person.
Right. Now, I understand. I understand this is a human using tools.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that before I broadcast where I am, I think of this crazy guy.
Right. I understand that. And I think that that's life. Part of this is that biologically we conflate a reader that's scanning your email with a human being reading your email. it isn't really reading your email, what Google's doing, right? But we conflate that because biologically that's all we understand.
Right, of
course. And even technologists conflate that. I mean, you're a technologist.
Yes, that's true.
And you
that's
use the word read my email. I'm not reading your email.
But there are people who run those servers, and there are people who set up the security around those servers. And so there's always the issue of not only unintentional data leaks. If I opt into Google Latitude and it's kind of automatically, you know, and I opt into it automatically broadcasting my location, you know, that's something that...
But why didn't you worry about that when you were using email for the last 10 years, sending it through multiple anonymous servers, unencrypted?
I think about email like sending a postcard. Any server that it goes through, I just assume that it can be, you know, that there's a copy made and that it can be published.
This is not new.
You use the internet
and you're in effect in public.
Yes. Yes. To some extent.
If what you're worried about is malicious spying.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Google's done the work of the angels by putting HTTPS on all of that traffic.
Yes.
So, in fact, only Google can read your email, not anybody in the middle. Only that bad engineer, only that guy, Code Monkey at Google can read it.
When I feel victimized on the net, it's because of people. It's because of dorks, idiots, a-holes, people.
Right, but you guys saw the New York Times article about how Target can mm-hmm. build up a profile of consumers. And so I feel uncomfortable with the idea that Target knows that I'm pregnant before my parents do.
By the way, fascinating story there, because that was not the headline that the New York Times used on its very well thought out. I think he was 9 months writing that piece, and it got very little traffic. But when was it the Washington Post, Jeff? Who was it that republished it with that headline?
It was Forbes.
Forbes. They got all the traffic. They got all the traffic. This guy did this really wonderful article. And all the traffic went to the sensational headline, not the actual article.
Well, I mean, that's just an unfortunate...
There's a reason I brought that up. It underscores that there's a sensationalism there. The truth is that people like Target do it all the time, and they do it without the internet. They do it in a variety of ways.
Well, through your club card, right?
Your club card, they track when you call them for help. They track because you have a Target ID, and they're aggregating every bit of information every time you... identify yourself to them of every kind of activity. And it has been happening long before the internet. Marketers have always done this. I can remember very well 25 years ago, there was a great book. In fact, I should try to find this book where they just showed everything they know about you from where you live. You know, from your zip code. I could tell you what magazines you subscribe to because people flock in the same group. It's not hard to get all this information without tracking cookies or anything else. And it's been done for years.
Have I told this on the show before? If I have stopped me, you can go to Axiom today and you can request and pay for the names and addresses of, and I'll really creep you out here, Gina. I can find women, single, 20 to 35 within 2 miles of my house who are college educated, who earn at least this much. I can get their names and addresses, not because of the internet, but because of pre-internet databases that exist.
Right.
And we go back to use and harm versus technology and gathering, right? The use here is if you use that to become a masher, well, that's the problem. The harm is what could go wrong. But the fact that this data exists has been there for ages, right? Why are we suddenly in this moral panic? Because we're scared of technology as a society. Which is
I think it's because we want control. So when you got your diagnosis, you said you were public about it, right? But you said that you were not public about it until you had spoken to Jake about it, your son, right?
Yes.
How would you have felt? I mean, so your doctor knew. I mean, there were certain, you know, your medical records.
I wanted that control. Yes, absolutely.
If Jake found out, no one
should lose that control. I don't think anyone should be forced out of the cancer closet. Absolutely not.
Right.
I argue instead is, if one is generous enough, and I believe it is an act of generosity, to be open about it, benefits come.
I completely agree.
That apart from the obvious cases that are legislative of our societal behavior of employment and insurance, and apart from our own stigmas, there's no actual harm. There shouldn't be a harm in society of saying you're sick. There shouldn't be.
There shouldn't be.
There shouldn't be, right? So what I'm arguing is if we're going to examine ourselves as a society, and if we're going to fear things, I think we should fear the fact that we have a stigma against people who are sick. It's medieval. And that's what we should be examining and changing in society.
That's true. That's true. But right now, if you're a woman who has a career and you're trying to get pregnant, you know, that's something you try to hide because you don't want people to know that, because that can affect your career.
If you're
high school and you're, you know, gay, that's something you want to try to hide because there's a stigma. So, we do have to separate technology from society. What I'm saying is that there are totally legitimate reasons why you want to keep things private. And I think that the idea that there's technology that people don't really quite understand, that could mean that they don't have control over protecting those things about their lives, you know, that can affect them in a bad way, is what freaks people out. But I understand it's important to separate those things. I think I'm really grateful that you wrote the book. I am out of the closet because I believe that it benefits people to be public about things that are pretty, I mean, to me, is private. But I think you have to acknowledge like the fear around this kind of automatic data sharing and where that comes from.
Leo's saying, I think, Gina, is that we also have to not be carried away with that fear when it is a fear that it says I'm uncomfortable or I'm creeped or things like that, that we have to deal with the specific harm and the balance that we are making, especially when that balance affects technologies in more ways than we will admit right now. And this is what Eric Schmidt was saying. Watch out, folks. You're going down a road. And he said, in a few years, you're going to regret it. You're going to regret that you let government come in and control the technology, the actual technology and how it operates because of a present fear. That's the issue. I'm trying to find here. I quoted a blog today that was a guy named... Tanta, and I'm not going to find it right away. Let me see if I get the. He talked about how, here it is, that we are that we have a weird view of privacy now, and that we've got to look differently at it. We have a broken idea of privacy, he argues, and it's gay-bar.com, and it's a wonderful post about this. And at the end. You know, he says that if Galileo had kept his ideas secret, then, you know, because he had fear, what would have happened? Where would he be if no homosexual ever outed themselves, stepping into the public light, endangering not only their social status, but also drawing a lot of hate and rejection their way? People would probably still claim that being gay was anormal or abnormal. Privacy is not your brave protector. It's an invisibility potion, he says. It means that nobody can see you, your ideas, your thoughts, your feelings. It not only means that you cannot be heard, it also means that your voice, your words, your actions cannot give courage, inspiration, and hope to so many people on this planet who might need it. You have every right to privacy. Nobody should be forced to say something that they want to keep secret. But the privacy based on hidden by default approach is a danger to us as a society. I think it's very well said, and that's the moral of what I'm trying to say. If privacy is important, I will not force you up, but let's also recognize the benefit of having the courage and the benefit not to be. And the main reason we choose to be so scared and hold in is because we're scared of the unknown.
Well, Galileo was right to be scared. He was almost burned at the stake.
He was. Jeff, you and I agree a lot more than it seems. But these conversations are always very useful to me to help, as I said on Twitter,
Obviously, I'm not doing a good job of getting getting into this conversation and places like policy centers and places like that there's a steamroller going on here, and I haven't figured out how to stand in front of it in a way that doesn't just say because I'm not grappling with the kinds of fears and concerns that you're talking about very well, and I know that, and I'm somewhat at wit's end to try to find that bridge that says, but hold on, folks, I understand this, but there's also that. And I haven't done a good job of it, so it's very useful for me, too, to have these conversations.
I think you've done a good job in the book. I think more people have to read the book. I think that's the moral of the story.
More and people make have to read me money.
Listen, I'm a full-on capitalist. I have apps in the App Store. I charge money. I used to be a hippie commie. Now I'm a complete capitalist, so I'm all for it. Buy Jeff's book.
Andy. Ruben, writing in the Google Mobile blog, or the Global Mobile blog, says, that 850,000 new Android devices are activated every single day. The total number of Android devices, I don't know if I buy this, but this is what he says, in the world are 300 million. Holy cow. 450,000 apps. A billion app downloads happening every month. Now, remember, Apple's about to cross 25 billion. But I think Android's pretty darn close. And growing very, very quickly. There are 100-plus Android devices on display at Mobile World Congress.
Oh, is that good or bad?
Isn't that interesting? He says there are 800-plus devices have launched since Android came out. 100 of them are new at Mobile World Congress today. Wow.
Yeah, Android's doing well.
Android's doing okay.
It's doing well. I, that's a good question, though, whether or not all those devices is a good thing. It very much is like the paradox of choice. Sometimes.
Google must feel so. They're now going to release their own tablet, as if we didn't have enough.
Well, we don't have the right one yet, I would say.
Well, we don't have the right one yet. Really isn't a good Android tablet.
Will a Google tablet change that? I don't think the Galaxy Nexus, for instance, is the best Google phone out there right now, is it?
No.
And it's a pure Google experience. I don't think it's even close.
Well, Eileen, that's your cue. Come on in, Eileen.
Oh, no, she agrees with me.
She does.
She doesn't
even use the Nexus.
No.
What's the best phone?
If I would get a phone right now, it might be
HTC One.
Well, that's not available yet. That's in April.
Be awesome.
But if I were to get a phone today, I would probably go with the Droid Razr Max.
Because you want battery life.
I want battery life, and
see,
it's awesome.
That's what's different between her and me. She is all about battery life. I'm all about screen size. And the point is, we have a choice.
That's right.
And
when you get old, young lady, you'll have the same problem we
have.
You
want a big screen. But see, I don't care about battery life because I have five now. Count them, five batteries for this thing. And I keep them all charged. I keep them in my pocket. I keep them in my glove compartment. I keep them in my desk. And if I need more juice, I just put in a new battery and I get it. Actually, I get about 8 hours or 9 hours, so it's not like I'm.
Have you talked to your shrink about this, Leo?
Yes. He said it. Yes, I did. As a matter of this morning, he said, can I borrow one? Because my phone is. That I do wish they'd standardize on the batteries, though. That would save me money.
We actually had a really good conversation about the word choice in the Android ecosystem.
Apple calls it fragmentation.
Right. And somebody wrote us a letter saying, please stop using the word fragmentation. Please start using the word choice.
I agree.
And we had a long conversation about this on our last episode, which I thought was really good.
Controlling companies, like media companies, call it fragmentation. Consumers call it choice.
Yep. Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
There really needs to be a website, though, like a single serving website that's like, what is the best Android phone right now.com? And it's like, I want better battery life, and then just gives the answer. I want a bigger screen, because honestly, I couldn't answer that question. I mean, I'm so glad
you need
that
like check boxes. Well, that's what All About Android's all about.
Right.
Did we show the video from the Best Buy Saturday Night Live video?
No.
Did we show that?
The Verizon one, we did show that.
We did show this.
You mean the Verizon one, Jeff?
We showed that.
Wow,
yeah.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Oh, Verizon.
That's why our show got pulled down 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So, I hate YouTube. Passion. Anybody who thinks I'm a Google shill.
I hate you, YouTube.
Just talk to him about YouTube.
Well, or a bunch of other things. Anyway. To be honest, I don't know why Google's making a tablet. I guess they feel that just as with the phone, they need to make reference implementations.
Yeah. Show the way.
Yeah.
Yep.
There are, according to Andy Rubin, 12 million Android tablets sold. I find that extraordinarily hard to believe. And it's the case, 8 million of them must be Kindle Fires.
But I don't think he's counting Kindle Fires in that.
Because it's not an Android branded. It can't
be. What did you guys think of the Asus Pad phone?
I didn't see that one.
That is one of my picks.
Amazing. Oh, is that okay?
No, go for it, Jeff. Talk about it. I love this concept.
It's phenomenal. It's an amazing video, yeah.
I'll go to the Asus. It's a 4.3-inch smartphone.
Yes.
So not super big. It's on the biggish side. However, it converts to a 10.1-inch pad phone station. So you dock it.
You dock it.
Now, how is this different from the Atrix
Well, you dock it into the tablet. It powers the tablet, and then you can actually dock the tablet into a keyboard. So you've got all three.
Wow.
So it's a,
and like it's running ice cream sandwich, and it's actually got a pretty vanilla skin on the phone itself.
So really, it's like a babushka doll.
But even better, the stylus that comes with it becomes your handset, Matryoshka. Becomes your receiver. You could buy a stylus and then you could use the stylus to say hello.
What, do you stick the stylus in your ear?
Yes,
I don't understand.
You do it. You use it.
It's like the world's thinnest little phone.
Yes.
It's hard to feel very masculine when talking with it, but.
So you wait a minute. Oh,
hello.
This thing sounds insane.
So like, you're saying that the stylus, this thing.
It's a bigger stylus.
Hello.
Yes, when it's docked into the tablet. Because you can't answer the phone, right? Oh, if it's docked in the tablet. So, but we got a stylus for you.
Can I get a little rubber band or something to strap it to my head?
Is it like a Bluetooth, like, ear thing? Is there a little...
No, it's a real stylus. I got to find a picture.
No, real stylus that you hold like a phone.
But you know what? This is exactly what we're talking about, that Asus, because Android's free and it's open, can develop the craziest, wackiest stuff. And this is good for everybody. This is wonderful.
I wish Steve Jobs was alive just to hear what he would have to say about this thing.
Oh, he'd hate it. It's got everything he doesn't want.
He would despise this thing.
But that's fine. You know what? We live in a world where there's room for Steve Jobs and Andy Rubin. And I think that's what we want. That's called choice, not fragmentation, no matter what Apple wants us to call it.
I would just love to know what word he would choose.
Appalling. Crap.
What I love about this is that you also saw there's the thumb drive sized Linux box, right?
Yeah, the Raspberry Pi.
Right. So
a lot of interest in that.
Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, so there's a new view here that you carry the computer power around.
Oh, it's a big stylus.
You can plug it into lots of different things, right?
Yeah. Well, I think what it's saying really.
There's the CEO, and he's using the stylus now.
What it's saying really is that all the innovation, all the excitement is happening in mobile. That your mobile phone is your computer. And so it makes perfect sense if your mobile phone's your computer to give you ways to make it, you know, work with a keyboard and a bigger screen and all that stuff. There are a number of people who have done kind of just random experimentation using a Bluetooth keyboard, HDMI out of almost any Android phone into a 27-inch screen. And so I think where Google really needs to go is with Android and make it more of a compatible desktop operating system. And is that what ice cream sandwich, is that what Jelly Bean, is that where they're going? Is it something
Isn't that where Windows 8 is going?
It is where Microsoft's going, absolutely.
Mobile brought to the desktop before Google did it.
That was, of course, the big story this morning as Microsoft put out its consumer preview of Windows 8. I did not get up at 6 in the morning to watch. But if anybody watched Steven Sinofsky, well, you know, we'll talk about it tomorrow on Windows Weekly. But I think this is all exciting. This is what you want. You want let a million flowers bloom. Many will be failures as the Samsung guy at Mobile World Congress a couple of days ago said, well, yeah, the tablets, that's not been so good. They didn't sell so well. That's great. That's fine. And Samsung's a big enough company that they can take the hit and try something else. I think the Note, and all indications are the Note's going to be a big runaway hit for them, right?
I think that's where they're trying to focus at this point.
Because it's a phablet.
Well, yeah, and they also introduced a 10.1 version of that as well.
That I don't get. I don't know. How is that different than a Galaxy Note? A Galaxy Tab.
Galaxy Tab.
Well, it does a few things different. There's going to be split screen. So you could browse and then also take some notes. I mean, they're positioning it a little bit different.
3.7 million. Okay, moving on. I don't want to do any numbers. No more numbers. Just in case Jeff has dibsed it.
No, you're fine.
And actually, I guess Andy took down the tweet that you wanted.
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
He took the party tweet down?
Well, let me see, because it says, that page doesn't exist. But maybe that's just a bad link.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah, because how can you kill a tweet? You can't kill a tweet.
Yeah, you can.
You can't delete a tweet.
Are you kidding? No. Just ask Rupert. No. Fun Android party in Barcelona last night.
That was the one.
Thanks to everyone who joined, and to Timo Moss, Calvin Harris, and Goldie Rocks for the grooves.
What's wrong with that?
I thought it was going to be something more salacious.
No, I just wanted to say he was having fun.
It's good.
He's having fun. Hey, you know what? You go to Barcelona and you don't have fun. There's something wrong with you. Barcelona, the parties, though, start at like 3 in the morning. You're supposed to go home after a long day, take a nap, eat at 10, and go out at midnight, right? I think that's how it works.
Oh, man. I'm too old for that. Like, part of me, that sounds really fun, and most of me is like, oh, no.
That's why they live on paella. I am excited about this HTC One. They have three models, the X, S, and R. It's a quad-core 1.5 gig. I'm sorry. There's two of them. So if you get the AT&T, forget I said quad-core. Unfortunately, the AT&T will be merely dual 1.5 gigahertz Snapdragons, but that's because of the Tegra, the LTE chipset and the Tegra don't go together. But the Tegra 3 will be in the universal version. So you'll probably want to get that, unless you want AT&T LTE. This is right. You need a spreadsheet. Because if you want AT&T LTE, you can't get quad-core because... This will be a 720p, 4.7-inch screen. So it's kind of somewhere in between a phablet and a phone. It's a phonablet.
You need a Leo glossary in this.
It will have Sense 4.0, which looks pretty sweet. So this is... this is going to be an ice cream sandwich phone with the new HTC Sense on top of it.
Yes.
Looked pretty good from what I saw.
Looked great.
The Asus is a fap top.
And it's got the Beats. We got the Beats. Can somebody get me my Ting phone? Is there anybody around? I want to show off this Ting phone. There's nobody here. Oh, it's in the drawer where I keep my phones.
It will take an hour to find it.
Just bring me all the phones. It's in the drawer in the left. It's I don't even know how you're going to know which is which. Anyway, oh my God, this is a new advertiser doing Android phones. I'm very excited. We'll talk about that in a second. Let's see what else. Huawei. That's how you say it, right? Huawei.
That's correct.
Ascend D Quad, the fastest phone in the world.
I put it in here because it seemed impressive, and quad core.
That's it.
Is the buzz quad
core? But see, this is also 720p. Everything's 720p, except now we're going to see 1080p is next. Mm-hmm. Our phones are going to be 1080p. Get ready for that. It's the D quad is the internal processing power.
A lot of the first impressions I've read have been pretty.
Look how ugly it is. It's too thick. It looks like the fastest phone in the world, doesn't it? Kind of looks like it was painted with beige paint.
People who saw it seem to be impressed. That's the only reason.
Anybody who's impressed by speed will be impressed. But the point is, there are 100 new handsets, Android handsets, at Mobile World Congress.
The one with the projector built in, even.
Yeah, the Samsung Pico projector built into the top, so you do your PowerPoint from your phone. And, of course... and this is where I think they made a mistake. Nokia announced a phone with 41 megapixels in its camera. But it's
41?
Running. It's 41. I didn't make a mistake there. That's the actual 41.
And it's running Symbian.
But it's running Symbian. Not even Symbian 60. It's running an old version of Symbian. And I think that what they said is, well, we've been developing this phone for 5 years. That's what we had 5 years ago. So it's going to be a very strange phone. It's also thick. It's clumsy. And when you take the picture, it shrinks it down to 8 megapixels or 5 megapixels in order to get it looking good. So,
in order for it to fit on the phone's
memory. It's actually, it's a bigger chip than in most point-and-shoot cameras. So it is, and there's some merit to it should be a nice camera. I don't know who would buy it, but I guess somebody's serious about camera phones.
Isn't there some sort of point with megapixels where... the more that you have, it doesn't matter as much? I thought
yes.
It was around 10 or 12.
It is. That's a complicated, long conversation.
Yeah, probably not for Twig, but I thought that at the point at which...
Here's the issue.
Level.
The chip size is what really matters. So you have two choices as a chip gets bigger. You can either get the pixels bigger and have them receive more light and be more accurate, or you could increase the resolution, which is what Nokia did, but the problem is now you're beyond the refraction limit of the lens, especially a little lens like that. So you're not going to have a very crisp image. So they knew that, you wouldn't ever take a 41 megapixel, besides the size would be huge. So what they do is they shoot 41 megapixels and then they squeeze it down, and that handles all the refraction issues and so forth. And
gotcha.
So you get a good 8 megapixel It's very, very crazy. So AT&T decided that they're going to have, let's see.
This is a little bit complicated, but
would you explain really, this? Because I read it and I don't understand it.
Here's the deal, right?
Basically, they're double dipping is the deal.
Yeah, they are. So what happens is Google is paying for the bandwidth to get to the internet. You're paying for the bandwidth to get from the internet, right?
Right.
And now AT&T says, well, we're going to create this new thing. It's like an 800 number call, so we can convince you it's free. And what it really is, it's the worst violation of net neutrality you can imagine, because what it says is you can a app maker, a developer, can buy the privilege of your app's bandwidth not counting toward the user's bandwidth cap.
So you can use this product with impunity.
Right. So what AT&T gets paid a third time. So you didn't just pay to by the developer, right? Or the developer controller, right? Whoever controls the app, right? And so it's fairly evil because they're trying to convince you, oh, this just makes it free. Now you don't have to worry. When you're using that app, you're not worrying about your cap that we don't really admit to you that we have.
But isn't that good for consumers?
No, because what it says is now this is the exact violation of net neutrality. That means that only apps that have the money to pay for this privilege will get this kind of coverage, and the rest of the apps will more and more and more will be discriminated against as they say, oh, sorry, you're not using one of the special apps. You're using one of the crappy apps.
So, for instance, we couldn't afford to do this. So,
right.
And we wouldn't want to do this. It's stupid. So,
right. Twit will be discriminated.
Sorry, if you watch Twit, it's going to go against your 100 kilobit bandwidth cap or whatever it is.
Right,
you could watch if you'd prefer AOL. They wouldn't charge you.
Exactly. Yeah, that's horrible,
isn't it?
Horrible.
I'm telling you, the world's going to hell.
And I got there was a fight with somebody on.
Debbie Downer this week.
Wah, wah.
May I show you a photo of an ice cream sandwich? That makes me happy.
Oh, you know what? If you had one, I would take it.
All right, I'll go buy one.
That
later.
Would cheer me up.
Okay, I'll buy one.
Needs
later.
One. Leo needs one.
I need one.
They have those at Google I.O.
Yeah, maybe they will. And what else were they going to have? All those glasses that we can wear and see what's going on for real.
Yeah, they might have some jelly beans.
Android glasses and ice cream sandwiches, I am so there.
I would love to see some research on how much this iOS debacle has hurt Google's reputation. And I wonder if, Google has been historically a very good brand, but I wonder if that brand is getting tarnished by all of this information, you know? Do you think real people, in other words, are paying attention?
I don't think real people know about this.
They don't care.
About the third-party cookie thing, about the iframe?
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's starting to spread. I think you see it on TV. I see these supposed tech reports on supposed TV news, and watch out, they're tracking you. And then the anchor comes back and says, "Well, that's mighty creepy, Sally." Yes, yeah. It is. It's happy. Yeah. It's at the level of happy talk now, and this becomes the accepted narrative. And you have a place like the Wall Street effing Journal doing this, Listen, the actual reporters who are doing this, I'm not besmirching their ethics in this whatsoever, but I think that they're falling into a company line here where Rupert Murdoch hates Google. And it comes out with his arguments that Google is a pirate.
Kara Swisher pointed out, Julia Angwin is not doing Rupert Murdoch's bidding.
That's what I'm saying. No, she's not. But. The higher-ups are happy to promote this. I watched a scene in Davos. I wrote about it, and I didn't put it up, but because it just seemed kind of old and inside baseball, but it's relevant, where the top digital editor from Wall Street Journal was at the Google briefing at Davos, and he just started channeling Murdoch about piracy. Well, go look up a movie. And Eric Schmidt just went into it and said, why don't we look up Mission Impossible? Since that's what Rupert had complained about. And it was just parroting exactly what Murdoch was saying in Twitter and elsewhere. And it was a top editor of the paper doing it.
Wow.
So, yes, the attitude does seep through. Now, I'm not even questioning that he doesn't actually believe it. But there is a company line there. And it's a company that the report is out today where Chase Carey, COO, I think it is, of News Corp, floated the idea today, and I've been saying this since last July, of News Corp spinning off its newspapers. Only 20% of their, I think it's profit, maybe it's revenue, is revenue, I think, is newspaper oriented. It is an entertainment company. It is a paid content company. That's what News Corp is. And so he doesn't really care about the ad business anymore. And that's part of the reason he's shooting spitballs at it. Sorry, I absolutely agree. I Julia is a wonderful person. I respect her. She's smart. She's not by any means doing this, but I think it's falling into, you know, out of orders from on top. It's too subtle for that.
It does seem
it's happening instead.
Somewhat self-serving.
Oh, very, very. And the path here is Murdoch himself trying to slam Google at every opportunity. So back to your question, Leo. You get enough of that happening from companies like this being read and repeated by happy talk bozos at TV and newspapers, then it does have an impact on the brand and on discourse around large technology companies being after you.
Right.
And that's going to affect all of us geeks.
Well, it already has, because the Wall Street Journal no longer lets you read the entire story from Google. The First Click Free program has moved on. I noticed this, too. This is an article by Danny Sullivan in Search Engine Land, that when you look up or try to read that Wall Street Journal story about the Google workaround on the Safari privacy settings, you didn't get the whole story. And it used to be if you get it through Google News, you click and it would get the whole story. No. You have to pay for it. You have to log in and pay for it. And apparently, this is something that's been going on for a while. Vice President of Corporate Communications for the Wall Street Journal says, as a strategy, we hold back a few of our top stories by not having the full story crawled, which limits selected articles from being available via First Click Free. We've been doing this since last summer. I did kind of notice it as a strategy to encourage subscriptions. I couldn't figure it out because sometimes it would work, sometimes not. Now, I have a Wall Street Journal subscription, so I was forced to remember my password and log in. But
I just click away.
What do you do?
I just click away. I'm like, oh well,
I guess I won't read that. Else. I'll read somebody else's paraphrase of it.
Yep. I mean, yeah.
I think the London Sunday Times still has my £2. Oh. it was such a nightmare process to buy, because I was trying to read the story that they wrote. That really, now you want a good example of this, Jeff. The London Sunday Times, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, published a story on Sunday, which made me very suspicious, saying that everybody, Facebook, Google, Twitter, everybody, all the apps on your Android phone were uploading everything that you knew to their servers.
All your texts.
Yeah, texts. They were listening to your – YouTube was turning the camera on and watching you.
Yeah.
And what Facebook,
was insidious about it, Leo, you're right, is that it got quoted, but you couldn't read the story.
Couldn't read. And I tried to pay the £2, and I couldn't figure out. I had a feeling when I read it, oh, you know what? This is not any research, or this is them looking at the permissions in the app, saying, well, they ask for permission. YouTube asked for permission to use your camera, so they must be using your camera. And that's the story, I think. But I couldn't find, and I tried to pay the £2, and I couldn't, and I never, so finally,
somebody
Facebook.
Somebody needs to send these people the oatmeal comic, the Game of Thrones. They use Game of Thrones as the example, but it works for everything. Someone in the chat room asked if I click away from the New York Times after the first 20 freebies. I actually pay for the Times. I have a subscription to the Times, so I don't have a subscription to the Journal, so I...
I not only pay for the Times and the Journal, apparently I now pay for the London Sunday Times. I don't know how long this £2 charge is going to continue. Facebook had a response which essentially confirmed what I thought, which is, no, we were doing a test with some people, but we do ask for these permissions. The Facebook Android app does not read your text messages except in a very limited case where the people were informed ahead of time. This is a beta test of some software we were trying in the Messenger
app. It was News Corp again.
And it was. I mean, that one was really... Well, the best case you could say, well, that was just trawling for clicks.
Yeah.
Right.
Worst also, case, it was part
here's
of the campaign.
Here's how I know this happens. The insidious part about a mogul company is not that the mogul ever tells anyone what to do.
He doesn't have
to. The underlings try to please the mogul.
We always knew what Paul Allen wanted.
mean, the only time when I worked at News Corp,
Tom Merritt knows where his bread is buttered. Let me tell you. you won't hear a kind word about Apple in this show. I'm sorry. See, now people are going to believe that.
They are. They are. Yes. And Tom is going to confirm it because he's going to say, oh, I can't say that.
No, Tom will say intentionally say the opposite of what I think just to get my vote.
Which is good.
Yeah.
When I was TV critic at TV Guide, owned by News Corp, I actually was never told anything. I was given far more interference at Time Inc. And I actually used this as an anecdote to defend Murdoch when he bought the Wall Street Journal and defend his lack of editorial control. The one time I was told anything was that Rupert was a big fan of Moesha. Honest to God. And if you don't like Moesha, Jeff, it's okay, but you better be prepared to defend that decision.
Really?
No, I'm serious.
Really?
That is the best story. That makes me really happy. And Jeff, if there's anyone who could defend his dislike for Moesha, you are the guy. I think you.
I actually thought it was cute. It was fine. It was. Phew, Moesha's okay.
Wow. Well, I can't log into the New York Times, so I'm just going to skip this next story.
They use cookies, Leo. They use cookies.
I've apparently forgotten my password. I was going to read a story from the New York Times about Google's new privacy policy, which, as you mentioned, Gina, goes into effect tomorrow and may be a violation of EU rules. But apparently I don't have my password. I must have exceeded the number of clicks because I've never had this before. They won't let me in. I hate paywalls. But kids, get ready because that's all you're going to get. That's all you're going to get soon.
You brought it on yourselves, people.
Let me take a break and make some money because God knows we only have a limited amount of time to do that, and then it's going to be all over. Go ahead, skip this ad. I don't care. Damn kids.
If you skip this ad, you might miss the baby polar bear later. Just wanted to lighten things up. Okay, here we go.
Do not skip this ad. There's baby polar bears ahead. They actually did this on Live with Kelly today.
They did?
They said, stay tuned. Coming up, leaping animals.
Stay tuned. Coming up, baby polar bear digging.
Where'd you get that? That's good.
Well, you got to thank Veronica Belmont for that. Oh, look at how cute.
Good. Now, it gets even better a little later on, right after this ad. actually, we bitch all the time about how cell phone companies work. And you know, I keep saying if somebody would do it right, they would kill. Well, it makes sense. The folks from Two Cows, same folks that do Hover, and Elliot Noss is a great guy, had the same thought. He thought we could do a new mobile service. What we're going to do, it's based on Sprint. They offer 4G phones, Android phones, through Sprint. It's called Ting. This sounds like I'm joking, but I'm not. Ting.com/twig. Ting.com/twing. Twig. Bing, bang, willow, willow, ting, tang. This is an amazing new way to get your cell phone service because it's Sprint. Now, of course, you're going to have the same coverage map as Sprint does, same 4G, but they have a pricing model that is unique. So what they've got is let me show you the whole thing here. They've got this account dashboard that at any time you log into your Ting account and you could see exactly how much data, how many minutes, and how many texts you're using. They bill megabytes, minutes, and texts separately. You, when you sign up, you say, I want this plan. I'm going to have this many phones. Actually, I could show you this. Let me go here. I could say, I want this many phones. So I'm going to say, let's say I have a family plan, 4 phones. That's the base price of $24 a month. And then, this is for you to enter in your own. Let me go to the plans here. This is also a nice pricing pricing thing where you enter in your current price. So then you say how many phones you want, and you say, do you want extra small, medium, or large, or extra large, or XXL plan? Choose whatever plan you think you're going to use for minutes, for messages, and for megabytes. You know, but here's the beauty part. If you don't use it all, they give you a refund.
Yay.
They don't give you rollover minutes. They give you your money back every month. You're automatically credited the difference at the end of the month. If you use more, you're billed at this rate, not some inflated crazy rate. So really, this is just a suggestion. You know, pick what you think you're going to use, because that way you can figure out what it's going to cost. This would be $69 for 1,000 minutes, 100 messages, a gigabyte. But let's say, oh, no, I'm going to use a gigabyte, and I'm going to do 1,000 messages, but I'm not going to do that many minutes. There you go. $92 a month for four phones. Four phones.
Wow. Wow.
And if I use less, I get a credit back.
That's pretty crazy.
It's crazy. They're Canadian. Does that help?
Awesome.
This is a U.S. U.S. company, but they're from Canada, and I think that's the issue. They just don't get that profit thing. There are no penalties. There are no premium prices for extra data. 4G phones. This is the Ting phone I'm using. It's a nice HTC phone slider. This is a slider, but you don't have to. They have all kinds of phones. This, if you've been looking for a better data plan, a better plan on your phone, in fact, this is so cool. Like, here's a tweet from somebody a couple of days ago. My Ting phone bill was $22 last month. That's $100 less than AT&T was. A new customer, family of four, actual usage across the four phones, 2,387 minutes. Wow, he must have teenagers. 4,227 messages and 429 megabytes of data. That's a lot. All of that, $244. On Ting, I'm sorry, that was on AT&T, it was $244. On Ting, it was $103 a month. Business, too, by the way. You get as many, you know, this could be for your whole business. A marketing firm in Boston says, we plugged in six of us together, we got $12,000 to savings a year. So there's a no-wait customer support line, same as Hover, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Email support. They've got blogging. They've got Twitter. They're really, you know, they're a bunch of geeks, very social media focused. Look at this. This is a really nice phone, by the way.
And then they have data access. They have, like, data devices as well?
Yeah. So this is a data device. This is a Android 2.3 on a HTC phone.
Yep. They've got a Novatel MiFi 2200.
They don't have, like, the... Oh, you mean, like, the MiFi cards?
MiFi. Yeah.
Yeah, they got two of them.
Don't have the latest, greatest phones. Like, they don't have the Note. And that's, you know what, that's not their fault. That's a carrier lock-in, unfortunately. But they have the Sanyo Zio, the LG Optimus, the Samsung Transform. Now, when you get the phone, this is the HTC detail. It's a little more expensive because you're not getting the subsidy, but it's less than a full price phone.
Can I just get a SIM from them if I have the phone?
Uh-huh. Wow. Prices range from $104 to $544 to purchase a phone. You can buy it right on the website. So just go to ting.com/twig.
Well, they're not SIM. They're Sprint.
They're Sprint. That's right. Yeah. Ting.com/twig. You'll save $50 on your device right off the front. So we do have a special deal for you. Ting.com/twig. Tell your friends. I think these guys deserve to be rewarded. When Elliot showed me this, I've known about this for 6 months. When he showed it to me, I said, you're going to get your ass kicked by AT&T and everybody else. We're going to try to run you out of town. He said, no, we're already up and running. This is awesome.
This is great.
This is support too good
them.
To be true.
It support them for doing it right.
Right. Well, what this does, you know, what's in any model, if you worry about what big corporations are going to do with the internet, and we should worry about
you
that.
You should.
There's a few answers.
Yes.
One is to have open source competitors, right? So the fact that Firefox exists is what enables Chrome to exist by pressure, but also means that IE didn't take over the world. And the fact that Ting can come along and say, you know, you can do a phone company right, bozos, that puts the pressure on otherwise. And that's what we have to do. The entrepreneurial technologists have to create this countervailing pressure to the idiots.
By the way.
Yeah, agreed.
No early termination fee. You're month to month. You cancel at any time.
Wow.
No additional charge for tethering or hotspotting. All the phones do it.
Oh, that's great.
Three-way calling, free. Caller ID, free. Tethering, picture and video messaging, free. Voicemail, free. So this is a remarkable service. And for a business, this would be a really good choice to have multiple phones. Ting.com/twig. And just, you know, look at the plans. Do the savings calculator. You get an idea. You know, Elliot's a great guy. He's one of those guys that you meet that you go, he wants to change the world, you know? Just really exciting. I just love it.
And,
Yeah.
Just back on the polar bear watch.
Oh, is that live?
They said it was live. I'm not quite sure. I just kind of
explore.org.
See somebody come along and club it over the head.
No, Jeff.
I promised to bring it back to Polar Bear.
So the way things have gone in the show so far, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw a Polar Bear clubbing.
That is no. This is explore.org. These are live webcams. And polar bears, panda. Oh wait a minute, they got pandas. Giant pandas, baby. Look at the live cams on the panda reserve. These are all live cams. Wow.
I don't know what's better, the polar bears or the pay only what you use phone plans. I know.
I hope you didn't skip the ad because you might have missed something really good. Oh, the panda bears are sleeping.
No, there's one eating right
there. Look at little. Oh, this looks like the San Diego Zoo.
Eats shoots and leaves. That might be.
Yaoxin and Lulin. That was so cool to see those up close. And they're so cute with their little pot bellies, but don't get close because they'll eat your face off. Okay. Thank you for this little break. I feel much, much better.
If you ever feel down, I will go back to our friendly polar bear. Okay.
Shoot at your baby polar bear.
Thank you, Eileen.
You're welcome.
Your baby polar bear.
Just say polar bear. Okay.
Baby,
I'll bring
baby
it back.
Polar bear. Do you wish you were in Kansas City? Everything's up to date in Kansas City. They've got fiber running at gigabit speeds. Here is a depressing video of Google installing high-speed fiber optic. Actually, this is an ad. Skip that. How do I skip an ad? You know, there's too many ads on the internet.
You're skipping the ad? What? You robber?
Here's the polar bear.
Do as I say, not as I do. Okay?
At least you can see the face now.
Oh, it's cute little polar bear.
It's going to turn around. We're going to see a Coke ad on the side
of it. The service will offer download speeds up to 100 times faster than those. This is from the BBC News. That's why there was a little ad, because they really got to monetize. Living online in Kansas City. Gigabit per second. Anyway, you can go to watch this at bbc.co.uk. Wouldn't that be nice to have something like that? I don't know why they're making modem sounds. That's crazy.
I wondered that too when I
was in the mood.
What? Yeah, what? Modem? No.
Mind you how slow it used to be.
Maybe that's it.
We're going to notice more as a real citizen.
All right. We're not going to watch this because we didn't watch the ad and we don't want to be pirates.
Eric Schmidt said that people have actually contacted them saying they want to move to Kansas City just because of this. And somebody in the audience said, I want to.
Of course. This is the best thing that we've tried. You know, we lobbied, Petaluma lobbied, every town in the country tried to get this because they knew if you get it, you're suddenly like the place to live. All right. So what do you think? This has been a little battle going on the internet over Google Plus. ComScore and others say that Google Plus visitors are not, it's not, it's been, ComScore said an average of 3 minutes a month on the site.
But isn't that bogus statistically? Because that's all the looky-loos who came in. The proper statistical should be how many, it may be a bad number, how many people come back regularly? And for those, how much time do they spend? What they're averaging in is dead accounts who came in and said, I'll try this. Leo said to.
There are a lot of them, I'm sure, yeah. Facebook has, on the average, about 7 hours. To 7 hours every month.
But it was another Wall Street Journal story going after Google.
Right,
I'm just saying.
There have been a lot of them, haven't there?
Tons.
Now, when you sign up for a Google account now, as a fresh, brand new user, you automatically get a Google Plus account.
No, sort of.
You do not.
The first thing they do is they push you to Google Plus.
They push you to Google Plus.
And say, make a profile, be a plusser. It's a very hard sell.
It's a very hard sell. So, okay. So these numbers are could be bad just because they're pushing. You know, if I want a Gmail account, but I wind up with a Google Plus account, but I just use Gmail, I mean, I'm essentially considered a Google Plus user who abandoned my account when that's not, Google kind of did this themselves a little bit in that
because they push
you to make a Google Plus account, because they have such high signups, they're going to have a lot of dead users.
Well, let me create an account. Okay. Create a new Google account. Your Google account is more than just Gmail. Take it all with you. Share a little. Work in the future. So, they push their products.
Yeah.
So
Google Plus visitors spend an hour. So a visitor, I guess, is someone who has been to plus.google.com. I mean, there's no doubt that Facebook has higher usage, but my view on Google Plus is kind of skewed. I mean, to me, it's still a very active and delightful, like, nerd salon. But I don't, you know, I think for regular people, you know, they're not seeing their friends and family on Google Plus yet.
That's true. I'm spending, though, a lot more time on Google Plus than I do on Facebook. I'm more in conversations there.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been seeing, Jeff, you've been a lot more active. Google Plus, I get kind of hot and cold about it.
I do too, yeah.
I get really hot about it. I'm like, this is great. The conversations are great. But it feels like, compared to Twitter, it feels like a lot of work because the posts are so much, you know, meatier, and because the conversations go on so much longer. I just feel like it's much more of a time commitment, where with Twitter, I just can kind of quickly scan and kind of get more out of it.
Hey, look
quickly.
At this. This is when you sign up, you have a box to check. Google may use my account information to personalize plus ones on contents and ads on non-Google websites. So that's what they were doing on iOS, by the way. So maybe you agreed to it, and you just didn't remember it.
Well, but Gina would say, I'll speak for Gina here, they still did something sneaky to get around the Apple effect.
Yeah.
The iOS thing.
Right.
I can't.
Right.
I screwed up on the, I hate CAPTCHAs.
Oh, the CAPTCHA.
I can't read that. What is that? Would you guys help me? What is that?
Cure,
I got.
O-O-N-D-S-C-I?
Oh, you're good.
No? Yeah?
Is that an I or an L?
See, I can't tell if that's an
these.
N or an R. Either.
N or an R, an I or an L?
Play sound again. Here, listen. Oh, go away. I give up.
Prove you're not a robot.
That sounded like this omen. That was the devil.
No, Google, you prove you're not a robot.
You prove you are a robot. You're a Python script, and you're asking me to prove I'm a human? Crying out loud. Oh, and now my browser's functionality's turned off. Please turn it on. Polar bear. Look at this.
Google's just doing a constant Turing test on the whole world.
Well, anyway, you don't have to go sign up for a whole account. I was just wondering if...
By the way, this is interesting. Look at what Google recommends as a setting. Under Accept Cookies, select only from sites you navigate to. They're recommending turning
They're recommending
off.
First-party cookies only.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting, huh?
Well, I mean, they own all their properties, so.
Well, that's somebody pointed out, you know, all they had to do was make that double. The thing was, it came from DoubleClick. If they had merely made it come from Google, they wouldn't have had to do any work around at all. It's very strange. It's all...
Well, but on the New York Times, it has New York Times cookies and it has DoubleClick cookies. DoubleClick cookies, I assume, are considered third-party cookies?
I'm very confused. Yes, they are.
Here we go again.
It's based on frozen.
Those are third-party. They're both frozen, and so I've got cookies turned on, and it still won't let me
do the tip number and tool. How's that?
Eileen is our savior this week.
Thank
She's
God.
Keeping things moving along.
So
She's
depressed.
Here we go, Gina.
Gina, what's your tip of the week?
Tip of the week is a really simple one. A new change in Gmail. Thanks to HTML5 and Chrome, Gmail, you can set Gmail to be your default email handler, which means that next time you go to Gmail, I just got it a couple of days ago, it'll say across the top, do you want Gmail to be the default, your default email handler? If you say yes, anytime you see an email address linked on any web page, you'll click on it and it'll launch Gmail instead of launching Mail or, you know, your crazy Windows client. So it basically lets you use Gmail as kind of your default client. It amazes me that it's 2012 and this is like a really exciting new thing. But it is. It's always been a pain. I've kind of trained myself to copy and paste links into Gmail, but now you just click them. And you can do the same, and there's instructions for setting Gmail to be your mail handler in Firefox and Internet Explorer as well. But it works kind of right out, very smoothly out of the box in Chrome.
Cool. Jeff, your number of the week.
My number of the week. Well, Eric Schmidt said in his speech, and I'm glad we didn't get to this earlier, but I'll get Leo fired up again.
more stuff Schmidt says.
Google products are blocked in 25 of the 125 countries in which Google does business.
Wow. And
the scarier one that he said that now 40 nations censor the net, up from 4 a decade ago.
Holy cow.
This is the trajectory we're on. I wrote a post this week that you should read to the tune of Pink Floyd. Saying to leave our net alone. And the basic thing that's going wrong here is that there is a growing presumption of, in all this talk of regulation, that the internet's broken. It ain't broken. That's what Eric Schmidt said too. It's not broken. So don't fix it, please. Leave our net alone. We don't need no regulation.
Yes.
The internet is not broken. And that's the fundamental thing we've got to get across to people, is that that's what is allowing this push to regulate under the guises of piracy, privacy, security, decency, indecency, pedophilia, and citizen and civilization.
Yes.
By countries all around the world and upper governmental organizations like the EU and the UN. A Wall Street Journal thing we mentioned last week is this talk about, well, maybe we should go ahead and start regulating so we don't have the UN do it. No, it ain't broken. Don't fix it.
Cool.
That was an excuse, a number as an excuse for a rant from a strange pink man.
He's lavender now. That is weird.
The camera keeps on readjusting every time.
Yeah.
So I'll see sometimes it'll see the background is anyway,
yeah.
We're back on.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm strange like pink.
Right. We fixed him and now he's weirder looking than he was.
I'm fixed in more ways than you know.
Yes, you are. Is Maps GL something new? Do you know, Gina, if that's something new?
I don't think so.
I thought it'd been around for a while. So it's using WebGL to turn your Google Maps into these incredible 3D 45-degree fly-ins and stuff like that. And John came and said, have you seen this? It's really cool. So I thought in honor of John, I think we've seen it before.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
Yeah,
but still
I don't think
neat.
That's new.
Well, anyway, in that case, around, but forget it. Forget I even mentioned it. I like WebGL.
Show an ad blocker, Leo.
Yeah, really. Let me show you how to, so you can avoid all these ads on the internet. Let me show you how
you
to block
them.
Should
show collusion is what you should show.
Should I show collusion?
All that trash.
All right. It's a Firefox tool, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to recommend it, though, based on our earlier conversation.
No, I'm just going to show you how
set Leo off again.
How open-minded I am. This is a Lifehacker article. Collusion for Firefox shows you who's... Oh, see, but now Google won't let me see this either. Who's tracking you on the web in real time? Chrome says, no, I'm sorry, Leo. You can't read that. Here's a polar bear. Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up because I got nothing more to say. Well, who's on triangulation this afternoon?
Robert Llewellyn.
I'm so sorry. Poor Bobby. Bobby Llewellyn, if you've ever watched Red Dwarf, he plays Crichton, the guy with the rubber face, the robot. He is also very famous for his Carpool podcast and others. He's just the greatest. Bobby Llewellyn will be our guest via Skype. I wish he were in studio, but it'd be via Skype because he's calling from Great Britain. At 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern this afternoon on Triangulation. TNT is coming up next. Jeff Jarvis is the author of What Would Google Do in His Brand New Kindle Single, Der Herr Gutenberg. And you could find Gutenberg the Geek on your Amazon. Just, you know, Amazon Gutenberg the Geek. Boom, it's 99 cents.
99 cents. If you're a Prime user and a Kindle owner, it's free.
You're kidding.
No, free.
I didn't even
London
know
library,
that.
Library, free.
So that's the deal with singles, free. Too, is for Prime, they're free. Yep. What a great deal. Thank you, Jeff, for being here. BuzzMachine.com. Keep fighting the fight, you pinko.
And keep doing it to Pink Floyd songs.
I know, yeah. Leave that
we
net alone.
No regulation.
Somebody has to cut that together.
We don't need no nerd control. Google. You know, we're going to go see The Wall in a couple of months, right? All of us.
In May.
The whole studio. Why don't you guys come over?
Really?
We'll take you.
Oh, that's it. I'm coming up for
we
that.
We already spent a bunch of money on tickets. Might as well just add two more. We got great seats, though. Gina Trapani is the author of... nothing. I'm not going to mention that Wave thing. The Complete Guide to Google Wave. Oh. Polar bears.
That's it. I'm putting an ad blocker on.
go to smarterware.org and see everything she's up to. And you can follow her on... Google Plus as well as Gina Trapani. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.